This is an Equity Bates Media podcast.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Everything you're about to hear is for education and entertainment purposes only. Whilst we are licensed, we're not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Any advice is general advice. Equity Mates operates under Australian Financial Services Licence 540697.
Equity Mates!
I will say this about investing. Everything you do learn is cumulative. What I learned at 20 is useful.
Welcome to Equity Mates Investing, a podcast where we explore what's possible in the world of investing. My name is Bryce. If you've just joined us for the first time, a huge welcome. We have a massive episode today. We're kicking off with a debate around the super for housing policy. We've got a Pimp My Portfolio segment and a community question on why Wren isn't investing in India. As always, to chat it through, I'm joined by my equity buddy, Wren. How are you?
I'm very good, Bryce. Very excited for this episode. You've called it a debate on super for housing policy. I don't know if it is going to be a debate.
Well, it's being debated.
But will it be debated by us?
Probably not.
But before we get there, a quick reminder, tickets are selling fast for our first live event for 2024. Mm. Ask an advisor. I think there's less than 20 tickets left.
Wow.
At the time of recording. So by the time this goes out, there'll probably be even less than that.
20 tickets left and less than 2 weeks until we go live.
We've timed this perfectly. So if you were waiting to buy a ticket, make sure you jump online. The link is in the show notes, or it's equitymates.com/events to secure your ticket. 10th of April at the Chevelle Cinema in Sydney. We're taking Ask an Advisor live. We're being joined by Glenn Hare, who's been on the show a couple of times. He was actually on the podcast on Tuesday, so go and listen to that
episode.
To get a taste of who Glenn is, and then you get your chance to ask your questions to Glenn directly, cut out the middleman of
cut
Bryce and I.
We might sit in the audience.
we'd love to see you there. Make sure you get your tickets. But Bryce, big episode today.
Yeah.
We need like a ding-ding, like the debate starts.
Kicks off. News and markets. Well, let's start with the super for housing policy, Wren. In the early March reshuffle, Andrew Bragg was appointed Shadow Assistant Minister for Home Ownership, and the debate has heated up from there.
Yeah.
Big time.
March reshuffle, for people unfamiliar, like the cabinet reshuffle, or the opposition cabinet reshuffle.
A momentous occasion.
Yeah. Something that everyone was very cognizant of. Now, for context, Andrew Bragg, who's now the Shadow Assistant Minister for Home Ownership, that may have been a newly created position.
I've never heard of it, feels new.
It seems like they're drawing battle lines. Definitely. For the upcoming election.
Definitely.
Now, what you need to know about Andrew Bragg, not a fan of superannuation.
No.
He literally wrote a book on it, literally. It's called Bad Egg, How to Fix Super, and he complains about every aspect of it, the politicization of it, the fees, the size, the union ties. Just Google Andrew Bragg super to get a taste of his feelings. That's important context for what we're going to talk about today.
Yes.
Because the opposition in Australia, the coalition, are proposing a super for housing policy, which is controversial, and it's obviously quite financial. So we want to talk about the financial aspect of it. You did say before we jumped in the studio today, this is the most political we've ever been.
Yes.
So we're going to try and not be political, but we're going to try and make a value judgment on the policy.
Well, I mean, it has implications on a lot of what we talk about here on Equity Mates and Get Started, which is the value of having money in the market over a long period of time.
Forget what we talk about. Like, what we think is important for, like, why we do this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's start by chatting about what the coalition are proposing and then get to why we've made this the first segment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So the policy to allow Australians to access their superannuation to purchase residential property isn't new.
No.
The coalition took it to the 2022 election. I think they announced it like a week or two out from the election. The policy was Australians could withdraw up to 40% of their superannuation capped at $50,000 to help buy their first home. Now, according to Angus Taylor, who is and was the Shadow Treasurer, the policy would be for first home buyers and women over 55. So it would be sort of quarantined to certain Australians. Now, the way the policy would work was any money taken from super and then potentially a portion of the capital gains made would be returned if that house was sold.
Yeah.
So it's like you take it out, you buy the house, and when you sell the house, you return it.
And I guess they're saying potential proportion of capital gains to try and minimise the impact of what that super could have grown to over the period of time of home ownership.
Yeah, yeah. So you're not missing out on the returns.
Yeah, you're not trying to play catch-up.
Yeah. Now, there's a financial challenge in that, but we can get to that. Now, so that was the policy then, and that's kind of been the policy since then. In 2023, the Liberal Shadow Assistant Minister for Treasury, Dean Smith, reaffirmed the policy, said it was still part of the policy, and argued home ownership must form a central part of the superannuation policy settings. But recently, Andrew Bragg has floated a few ideas to expand the policy.
And sorry, just to confirm here, this is at different to the policy during COVID.
Yeah,
where
yeah, yeah.
You could access your super, I think, 10 or 20 grand.
That was like a financial hardship that was, thing.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Like people weren't working. And
but you could use that on anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you didn't have to return
and
it.
And you didn't have to, yeah. And so some people did put it towards housing deposits or whatever.
Some people put it towards TVs.
Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So that this is separate. So Andrew Bragg has recently floated a number of ideas to extend the policy. Yeah. So he's proposed expanding it to more than 50 grand. And he argues that's in line with fast rising house prices. He's also floated not requiring the money to be returned to superannuation after the sale. And then his third policy, most recently, he's also floated the idea of allowing superannuation to be held in offset accounts to reduce people's mortgage repayments. Andrew Bragg is chairing a Senate inquiry into the retirement system. It was slated to return its findings June 2024. It's just had its mandate, its terms extended for another 12 months with an extended remit to consider ways to use super to increase home ownership, including with mortgage offset accounts. So that's kind of the context. That's what you need to know. That's what the coalition are proposing. And it's definitely not the hottest button political issue at the moment. You know, in Australia, we've got China relations, we've got nuclear energy, we've got a lot of things that are sort of more front of mind. But for us, from a financial point of view, this should be spoken about more.
Well, I mean, I believe it's just going to continue to heat up. I think this will happen.
Really? You think the coalition will win and it will happen?
Sorry, I don't think it'll happen through coalition. I think at some point in our lifetime, and I don't know if it'll be in the next 10 years or so, I do think that it'll get to a point where that government allow people to access, use their superannuation in more ways than to retire. And I say that because we have started with superannuation from the moment we could work.
Yep.
A lot of our parents started with superannuation much later in life.
Yep.
So our balances are obviously going to be pretty healthy, so to speak. And I think the government will be in a position where they need us to rely more on our superannuation.
For retirement or for other things?
I think for definitely for retirement, but I think there's no policy that they're going to bring out. We've spoken about this so many times that bring house prices down.
But you've got to also understand that the reason that super exists in the first place is because the pension system is unsustainable.
Yeah.
And the government need us also to use our super to fund self-fund retirement.
I know.
Because at some point the population pyramid is too inverted and we can't.
Yeah. I understand that. I just think that something will happen with super. I don't mind the idea of sitting super in offset if you can't touch it, but it can offset it.
Okay. So you said you think this will happen. Let me ask you, do you think it should happen?
No.
Prime Minister for a day?
No.
Okay, why is that?
I think that it only kicks the can down the road for the superannuation pension problem, really. We're all going to be carrying the burden of that ourselves as we get later in life. So should it happen? No. We know the having this money in the market, pulling 50 grand out when you're in your early 30s is going to have a detrimental effect to how much money you have in superannuation.
Yeah. So for me, there's two big reasons why I don't think this should happen. And I'll try and make the points succinctly. First of all, for people's personal financial situation. And secondly, for the effect on the Australian property market. So let's start with people's personal financial situation. Draining your super early, and we're talking mainly about first home buyers here, and starting again with a smaller balance makes it nearly impossible to catch up. And so you're not just going to be 50 grand worse off in retirement. You're going to be hundreds and thousands of dollars worse off in retirement. So there's been heaps of analysis out there, especially the super funds. They're all getting their lobbying machines going around this. But I've done our own analysis here. Here's some Equity Mates analysis. So let's say you're putting $313 per fortnight into super. Now that's 12%, which is what super is going to get to, 12% of an $80,000 salary, less 15% tax. So that's bang average, yeah? $313 a fortnight. Let's say it compounds at 7% for 40 years. You have $1.78 million in retirement. That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's great.
All the retirement...
Very comfortable.
All the retirement planners, if you have $1.78 million in retirement, you can have a comfortable retirement.
Definitely.
Let's say rather than just letting it compound for 40 years, after the first 10 years, you take $50,000 out to put towards a home deposit. After that same 40-year period, with the interruption at 10 years, take $50,000 out, keep adding and compounding from there, you would have $1.38 million. So you're not going to be 50 grand worse off in retirement, taking 50 grand out to buy a house. You're going to be 400 grand worse off.
Mm. Which is massive.
Yeah.
Two devil's plays advocate points here.
Yeah.
Firstly, 1.78 million, even 1.38 million is more than double, if not getting close to three times what all the experts, in quoted commas, say you need in superannuation to live a comfortable, in quoted comments, lifestyle.
You've got to inflation adjust that number though. So like I think the Association of Australian Superannuation say like $595,000 for a single person is a comfortable retirement now, but that's not going to be the case in 40 years.
That's true.
Yeah.
Second devil plays advocate.
I think it's just devil's advocate.
True. Is that... What it doesn't factor in is what $50,000 could get you in a better property now, what that could do financially later in life.
Yeah, like potentially that $50,000 compounds at a faster rate in the property
market. That leverage in the market.
Yeah.
Could genuinely mean $400,000 or $500,000 more.
Yeah. And if it's the difference between buying a home and not buying a home, there is a strong argument that it's worth it, because even if it doesn't equate to 400 grand, everyone's, like all of these associations' definition of what you need to live in retirement assumes that you have a fully paid off living situation.
Yes.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I completely understand that. But that leads me to the second point, which is the effect on the Australian property market.
Yeah.
You cannot solve this problem by just throwing more money on the dumpster fire of the property market. All it will do is fuel all the problems. Now, the RBA, every economist have cautioned about this policy, saying all it will do is inflate property prices. It will not make things more affordable. The Super Members Council, now they have obviously a vested interest in this, but they did a study. They think it will push prices up nearly $75,000 across Australia's five largest capitals cities, which is the equivalent to about a 9% increase. The Grattan Institute's Brendan Coates came out and said this policy isn't going to help home ownership much. And his point, which I think is important, is that those who aren't buying homes now are also the people that don't have much in super. He cited that for the poorest 20% of people aged between 25 and 34, the people that we really want to help with home ownership, their median super balance, $5,000.
Yeah.
So all you are going to do is entrench all of the same problems that you have currently, which is you're going to throw more fuel.
Well, sure, they should means test it.
I mean, that's...
Yeah.
That's controversial in its own way, but
yeah.
That would at least level the playing field somewhat.
Need it.
All you're going to do is supercharge those that are earning more to be able to withdraw more and to be able to pay more.
Leverage more.
And those that are and leverage more, yeah. Mm. And those that are earning less and therefore have less in super are not going to have a more level playing field.
Mm.
They're going to struggle more.
Mm. What would you put a bet on then that something along this policy line would eventuate in the next 10 to 20 years or they sack negative gearing?
Oh, this over negative gearing for sure. Yeah. Now, I think we've spoken about this enough. People are obviously going to have strong feelings on this on both sides of the issue. The place to have this discussion is the Equity Mates Facebook discussion group. Let's continue the debate there. But I do want to have a final word. Scott Morrison's government in 2020, so also a coalition government, they had the Callaghan Review into retirement income. So they looked at this and they identified home ownership as a major factor in a comfortable retirement.
Hmm.
That is not a controversial statement. Like, we all agree that that is the goal. The question is just how do we get to that goal without hurting something else that's important for a comfortable retirement?
Hmm.
Super. Mike Callaghan, former Treasury official who led the review, came out and said, even though home ownership is a major factor, he said he did not think younger people should have access to their super for a house deposit. Now, this was a coalition review, so just remember that. Callaghan said, quote, solving the problem of helping first homeowners get into housing is not going to be solved by tweaks to the superannuation system. It's not going to achieve its objective at all. As many people say, it's likely to just add extra pressure to house prices. And there is a cost, this very significant cost, to the individual of letting them access superannuation. It's going to just push house prices up, not make things more affordable, and it's going to hurt people's superannuation balances in retirement. And that's why we don't often get political here, but I'm pretty passionate about this one.
Well, good news is it's not in action yet. It's certainly getting debated, though.
It's great politics, though.
Yeah, definitely.
And you got to respect the politics of it.
Yeah, yeah.
It'll be a sugar hit for people.
Yeah.
People will feel like they can afford more.
Yeah.
Because, like, there will be an immediate, I can afford more, and then there'll be a lag effect on house prices as the money washes through the system. And so, like, in the first year, people will feel really good about the policy. But 3 years, 5 years on, all we're going to see is just higher house prices and no more affordability.
Yeah. And then we'll be allowed to withdraw more of our super.
Yeah.
Yes. Anyway, as Rain said, come and join us in the Equity Mates Facebook discussion group to continue the conversation. This is one we'll be keeping a close eye on.
This is Pimp My Portfolio. Pimp My Portfolio.
What do you think of the
stuff? God, I write that.
That's what we want to hear.
Nice. So to kick things off, we've got the portfolio here in front of us. So Ren is going to give us a bit of a rundown for everyone listening along as what is in your portfolio. And then we're going to throw to you to get a bit of thought on how you've constructed it and then over to you and Luke. So Ren, let's do it.
All right. So a largely individual stock portfolio, some of the biggest holdings are Spotify, Google and Netflix, 13%, 12%, 10%. A number of other, technology names, Amazon, Microsoft, PayPal, Apple are in there. And then we've got some ETFs. Carbon, is that the...
KRBN,
you were a big proponent of that one.
Oh, my God.
Interested to hear what Luke says about that. We've also got Hack in there.
I still hold it, by the way, Bjorn, if you did get the inspiration from this show, so...
It will we'll get...
I did, but I went through under the bus and did my own research, of course.
Nice,
yes,
nice,
good,
nice.
Yes, good. I think I'm underwater on it as well, but anyway...
And then we have some non-tech individual stocks. We've got Johnson & Johnson. That's Caterpillar, isn't
Caterpillar,
it?
Caterpillar, yeah.
So, a largely individual stock portfolio focused on the US. I would hazard a guess that you have a stake account, Bjorn.
That would be correct.
Nice. Not sponsored, yep. But could be.
Should be. Awesome. Stuff the money up, Liv. Stuff it up, bro.
So before we get Luke to reveal the nickname he's given your portfolio and talk about it, tell us how you came to build this portfolio and how you think about it.
I actually had a few more ETFs when I first started my investment journey, but I had them spread across different platforms. And when I moved across the state, I sold out of a few of them and just bought kind of the individual stocks across. So it's been an accumulation of basically big blue chip companies that I just look at holding long term and just buying whenever the market reacts poorly. And they go on sale, and then slowly trying to rebuild up that core part of the portfolio with some more ETFs. There's probably just been a few too many good opportunities with the blue chips over the last 3 years that I haven't put as much money as I should have done into the core, but slowly getting there.
Nice. Okay. That gives us a bit of context. Luke, what's your views? What have you named Bjorn's portfolio?
I don't think anything can live up to ring a ding ding. You've got the king.
I know.
I've called it JNJWTF. The reason why I've called it JNJWTF is really because I couldn't come up with a decent name for this portfolio, and JNJ kind of stands out like dog's balls as something that sort of, I don't know, it doesn't seem to fit with the rest of everything else that Bjorn's been buying and kind of interested in. But look, by the by, that's not really that relevant.
J&J is Johnson & Johnson.
Johnson & Johnson, yeah. So
why doesn't that fit with other things?
Well, Amazon, Spotify, Google, Johnson & Johnson. It's like, you know, techie, tech media, tech hair products. You know, like it's a...
What's your thinking around it, Bjorn?
There was some Pfizer and some Bayer in there as well. So Johnson & Johnson kind of fell into the healthcare side of things. But nice. I jumped out of that ship after COVID started to taper off.
Yeah,
so
fair.
There was a kind of group of them, and now he's just standing by himself.
Got it. Understood. I like the commentary around portfolio. I like when people can tell me they're, you know, that we used to look like this, and that's why it makes a lot of sense. Look, I'm a big fan of Spotify, and I think Google and Amazon are too cheap too. So if you're just talking about stock specifics, that being said, I just sold a bunch of Spotify stock. So
because you thought it got overvalued?
Just looks a bit pricey to me now. Made a bit of dough, kind of happy with that. And similar to what I've been talking to people on this show about getting out of concentration into diversification as a way to stay invested in the markets, but with less spicy sauce necessarily and as less concentration. So whilst I think Google's cheap, I think Amazon's cheap, I also sold Apple, I've also sold Microsoft. Mm-hmm. So that's my own personal commentary on the stocks. Whatever you want to do, Bjorn, you know, totally up to you, mate. But, you know, that's my view. I think tech's had a pretty good run, and I'm happy to be taking some profits here.
I'd love to get your 2 cents on PayPal.
Yep, I think that is a sell as well. I've owned that over the journey as well. I think that business is terminally disrupted, is going to find difficult. I think it's a takeover target probably at some point, but yep. I think in the interim, you're probably going to do better just, you know, getting on with business. So that's sort of my view. Sometimes holding it, someone smart once told me, never hold a stock just for a takeover. If a takeover's like potential's there. That being said, we had one of our stocks in our small cap fund get taken over this week unexpectedly. But you never want to be there for a takeover only. There's other reasons you want to hold a stock, and then the takeover sort of as a kicker.
I haven't actually looked at the stock price PayPal for a while. It hasn't gone very well.
It's been smoked, man.
Since its COVID highs, it's down like almost 80%.
A lot. Yeah,
it's torched, right? So, you think about like all the pays that are out there, right? Like Apple Pay. Like, that's a pretty big disruptor to a PayPal's payments platform. You think about Square, you think about all the other merchant services that are out there now. Like, it's a pretty competitive, busy marketplace, of which PayPal used to have a pretty nice monopoly holdover. Mm. Anyway, I would like to see some more diversifications. Think about what good active managers look like around the world, Bjorn. They own 20 to 60 companies across a range of sectors, even if you are running a concentrated portfolio. If that's not going to be your jam and you want to keep living in, you know, two sectors or three sectors as you kind of have been and having some success with by the sounds of it, think about like getting a percentage of your money in an MSCI All World type setup with an ETF or an active manager who runs a portfolio similar to what I'm describing for some of your money, and then take some of your money as your individual stock investing money where you're going to do the work and get down in the weeds. It's more just about having some disciplines around that type of investing. So I'll give you some of the disciplines that we use at Seneca around portfolio construction, and you can take or leave that as a grain of salt. You know, I am one of millions of people out there in the world, and so we run in the large cap. This is for ASX 200 benchmarked product that I run, the large cap Seneca Australian Shares SMA. That's got a goal of doing, you know, 2 to 4% alpha compounding over the long run above the benchmark after fees. So it's not a spicy product by any stretch of the imagination. It's designed to, you know, be a core holding for people. But we start as a base case. We have to want to buy at least 2% of the portfolio in any company that we buy. So if I can't buy 2%, I don't want to own it. So I would never buy an ETF with 2% of my money, because I'm not actually buying one company. I'm buying, you know, 200, 300, 500, whatever. So by the same token, we can't buy anything at more than 10% as an initial position. So we can let that run. If we buy 10% and it goes to 15, we can let it run if we want to. But
we
once
not let it go much further.
But once it gets to 15, if I had so much conviction that I had 15% of my money in one stock, I would argue, why would I not have 100% of my money in one stock? That's the sort of level of conviction that I'm talking about, right? So now talk to other good fund managers, you know, around Australia who run 15 stock portfolios, and they will have different views on things. And you're obviously playing in a universe here that is unlimited by the ASX 200, right? So I might feel more comfortable with 15% of my money in Google, say, for example, than I would 15% of my money in BHP. It's just there's a quantum of scale and issue there. And a quality issue too. Yeah. So I'm not saying you have to live and die by these rules. I'm just trying to give you some context. Then I'm also always thinking about what's my average position size across my book. So if I'm running an average position size that's closer to 5%, I'm running more concentration and more sensitivity to the market at any given time. So that's like a higher beta type portfolio on average. If I'm running closer to two and a halves and threes, I'm going to have more like 40 stocks, which is the limit of where I can go to in my portfolio, rather than 20, if that makes sense. So, you know, you've got to start to sort of play with your portfolio and the construction of it based on your sort of macro views a little bit, and then you get down to the nitty-gritty weeds of each stock. It's not just picking winners. That's not how you generate outperformance. Picking winners is a complete fugazi, like, don't know what you're doing, never run a proper portfolio thing that people say, I'll just pick the winners. Like, no, bullshit, right? No one picks winners. Everyone has a 50% win rate or less. What you need to do is build a great portfolio. And how do you build a great portfolio? Is with discipline. Sorry, I shouldn't swear. With discipline.
So you're saying if the individual stocks are running at about a 2% of the overall, then obviously your holdings are going to be larger. But then as you get more concentrated, those numbers increase up to 5 to 10% mark, but then you're more.
What I'm saying is, if you go and find a new company today and you're not willing to buy 2% of it, you haven't found a new company. If you find a new company today and you want to buy 20% of your money in it, I would suggest you've got something wrong.
Well, it's just like, maybe you shouldn't put 20% of your money in it. Like, I'm not sure. Like, the analysis might be completely right, but even if you're super bullish on it, keep in mind like these rules of portfolio construction.
What's the Mark Twain quote from the start of The Big Short? It's like, you know, it's not the things that you know that get you in trouble. It's the things you know for sure and just ain't so.
Yeah.
You know, and so when you are that bullish, you need to, and that's what's hard about being an individual investor or self-directed person, is you don't have anyone to to bounce with. You know, if I'm pitching Benny a stock and I'm like, oh, Benny, what do you think about this, this, and this, and this, and go and research that. He comes back, goes, look, you missed this, you missed this, you missed this, then no good. And I'm like, oh, well, it's, you know, like, fair enough. Maybe it is good, but for a lot less money than I thought it was.
Hmm. That makes a lot of sense in terms of the split there, which I know I've been a bit slack on in terms of actually sitting down with some hard rules. But I remember one of the podcasts ages back talking about Warren Buffett's, you know, you've got a train ticket, you can only get 10 punches on it. So that sits well with me in terms of keeping the total number of companies in the portfolio small. And if I'm not willing to invest at least 2%, then just leave it alone. Mm.
So I think there's some good rules of portfolio construction. I do want to turn to some of these ETFs, mm-hmm. and you visibly flinched at the carbon ETF. So we do have to start there.
Yeah, well, it was going well when I first bought it, and then I've done the sucker thing of it's gone. It's up and down railway, but I think it's sitting at just slightly up at the moment. I can't actually remember. But I think I've just kind of been holding on to that, hoping that it would get at least back to where it was and then continue upwards, which I know
you
guys are going to kill me.
You've literally set yourself up. You've pulled me a pie outside of stump. It's you know, I can really put the front foot into this. But no, let's look, Bjorn, I think the first most important thing, and this is just about leveling, like trying to level you up, when you talk about your investments, no one cares, or you shouldn't care, about historical returns. If you've got a capital gain or a capital loss, it doesn't matter. What's going to happen from today is all that matters. So it doesn't matter. Okay. A good company is not one you've made money out of. That's not how it works. Yep. You could have a great, I mean, I've got companies in my portfolio where I'm 15, 20% underwater right now. And they're ripping businesses, and I'm going to make a shitload of money out of those companies.
Gotcha.
So you know, just because you hasn't worked out for you yet, investing in the market when you buy individual shares, you are wrong until you're right, and that is the only way you can make money. Is you have to know something different or think differently to everybody else, which naturally means that the market, just because you buy today, doesn't mean tomorrow everyone's going to agree with you.
So just quickly, carbon ETF.
Carbon ETF.
Specifically,
We could do a whole episode on Luke's thoughts around ESG investing and what is carbon positive, neutral activity. I would just argue that people think that investing in data centers is carbon neutral. Well, I can tell you they're some of the biggest emitters going around. People think that investing in big tech is good for society. I would argue that, you know, Facebook has done more for teen depression than anything else, you know, in the last 15 years. So, look, there's lots of personal perspective there. I don't think that, you know, thermal coal exports from Australia are necessarily an issue. So there's a lot of, personal issues that I have with buying an ETF like that. I think if you want to do ESG investing, there are some good products out there. Actually, the BetaShares sustainability process that they run is actually really good, and I'll give that a shout out. Blair from BetaShares is really smart on it as well. So if you want to go listen to someone, go find Blair from BetaShares. But I'm sus on it.
The ESG component actually didn't cut across my books at all when buying into that one. Yeah, it was more from the concept that there's a push, obviously, to go carbon neutral or negative and whatnot. Carbon credits are a good way to go about that, but eventually governments will try to taper off the supply of it. And at that point, you'd see that shift in supply and demand, which hopefully would occur over the next 5 to 10 years. So it was kind of a long play of, you know, as the supply comes more and more online, as they're trying to get more people to shift to carbon.
Okay. Well, look,
neutral,
I think
negative, and then long term.
I think in that respect, then, you know, I don't mind the sort of financial play, I suppose, on carbon credits. Whether that's, I think there's a lot of people trying to market that space, and I would suggest that maybe the picks and shovels, i.e. the exchanges and some of those other ways to play increasing trading volumes in that sector might be a cleverer way rather than the underlying. That would just be my gut feel for it. Haven't done a lot of work, so asterisk.
I'm still long KRBN.
Wet behind the ears, Bryce.
Well, look, there's a whole other conversation that we can have here, but I think we will have to save it for another time. Bjorn, thank you for submitting your portfolio and for jumping on with us today.
No worries, boys. Thanks for having me on. It was an absolute pleasure.
Hit my portfolio. Hit my portfolio.
Well, Well, thank you to Bjorn for submitting to Pimp My Portfolio. If you'd like to submit to your portfolio, head to equitymates.com/contact. All the information is there. Similarly, if you'd love to sit down with Luke and have an in-depth conversation about your portfolio,
going deep,
or all things personal finance, head to equitymates.com/advice and we'll make sure we connect you with Luke and his team. But guys, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much, Luke.
Thank you, gentlemen.
We're going to take a quick break, and on the other side, we've got a community question asking Ren why he isn't investing in India. We'll be right back.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact? You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Welcome back to Equity Mates. Ren, it is time for...
Let's ask the community.
Equity Mates.
I just had a question.
Hey, Bryce, Ren. I've got a question.
Your question answered.
This question has come in from Jordan Robertson. And he's obviously been listening to a lot of content we've been doing and the excitement we have around India.
Yeah.
Rightly so.
Yeah.
We had some great guests on late last year.
Yeah. I think if people want to join us in that excitement, the place I would start is our interview with Saurabh Maharaja.
Yeah.
We'll include that link in the show notes. That got us going.
Yeah. That got us super pumped. But the question is in regards to your portfolio, Ren. He wants to know why you haven't decided to invest in India Nifty 50, given how much hype we have around the growing economy and the excitement that we felt towards the opportunity to invest in India last year. Now, just to put some context there, the India Nifty 50 is the main index over in India. It's the top 50 companies.
Yep.
So... over to you.
Well, I think I want to start by asking where the rumor that I'm not investing in India has come from. And I think the context here is at the start of this year, we spoke about how we're investing for 2024.
Yeah.
My core portfolio is made up of 5 ETFs, Australia, US, UK, mainland Europe, Asia, ex-Japan.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think the question was, well, why isn't India in there?
Mm.
Well, India is in there.
Oh.
It's just hidden in. Well, it's not hidden. It's part. It's made up the Vanguard Asia, ex-Japan. So I went under the hood and had a look at the ETF to pull some stats for this episode. So unsurprisingly, China is the biggest country weight in that ETF. 29% of the ETF is Chinese stocks. Second biggest country weight is India. 22% of the ETF is India. And so I am investing in India just through a broader Asia ETF.
Yeah.
Now, if India grows faster than the rest of Asia, then India will take up a bigger proportion of that ETF as it gets rebalanced quarter after quarter. If other parts of Asia grow faster than India, it will make up a smaller part of the ETF. And I'm okay with that because really all I want is growth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I had a look at some of the top 5 holdings of the ETF. So the top holding is Taiwan, which is Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing. It's actually 8% of the ETF.
Wow.
Which just, you know, it's not just NVIDIA that is running in this semiconductor story at the moment.
Yeah.
The second biggest company also really tied to the semiconductor story, Samsung, out of South Korea. Then we have 2 Chinese companies, Tencent and Alibaba, 3 and 4. But then number 5 is the biggest Indian company, Reliance.
Huge, huge company.
Yeah.
It's 1.8%.
Yeah. So... yeah. The rumors of me not investing in India are not true. I just am doing it through a
I guess, like a continent-based ETF.
Yeah, you're not getting caught up. And this is where I think some people might get a little bit caught up with their core portfolio is being too particular with certain things. The purpose of what you're building with the core is just to get broad, large global exposure. Yeah. If you then start trying to throw on the India Nifty 50 and emerging markets, you know, or more country-specific ETFs, it becomes less core and more like you're actually trying to play geographic thematics here.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
There's nothing
important
there's
to look under the hood.
There's nothing wrong with doing that. Like, there's nothing wrong with, in the same way that I've got Australia, that's an individual country. You could do India if you wanted to. But for me, it's like, at some point, you have to say enough is enough in terms of the number of ETFs you've got, the amount of complexity you're willing to have. But most importantly for me, it's actually just the amount of money I have to invest. Like, I'm at my limit with the five core ETFs, trying to dollar cost average into them regularly. I can't do more.
Yeah.
I'd love to. I get so excited every time we speak to an investor.
I know, you buy everything. But
this kind of works for me. So that's what I do.
Nice. Well, thanks for the question, Jordan. If you'd like to ask us a question or ask any of our experts on the show, head to equitymates.com/contact. There's a form there. You'll be able to fill it out and we'll make sure we get the question answered either online, on the show, or through one of our experts in our weekly newsletters. Well, Ren, that brings us to the end of today's episode.
Yeah, you should sign up to those newsletters if you haven't. There's some good stuff in there.
Great stuff
good
in there.
Good gear.
Good gear.
we'll include a link in the show notes.
Link in show notes. Make sure you grab some tickets to the our live event as well. There are only a matter of a handful left, so I'm sure they will sell out in a matter of days. But Ren, always great to chat stocks. We'll be back in your feeds tomorrow with a deep dive on the resources sector, one of Australia's most loved sectors, and a stock tip that is a picks and shovels play for the resources sector.
Pun intended, also not a stock tip, just a stock deep dive.
Anyway,
we'll be back in your feed tomorrow.
Tune in tomorrow.
You have been listening to an EquityMates Media production. In the spirit of reconciliation, EquityMates Media acknowledges the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respects to their elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today. This podcast is intended for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general advice only and has not taken into account your personal financial circumstances, needs, or objectives. Before acting on general advice, you should consider if it is relevant to your needs and read the relevant product disclosure statement. And if you're unsure, please speak to a financial professional. The hosts of this podcast and their guests may have positions in the companies mentioned. EquityMates Media operates under an Australian Financial Services Licence 540697.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.